Okay, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform with one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite.
Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/stereo. netsuite.com/stereo.
Hey, everybody, this is a preview of today's members episode. If you want to hear the whole thing, head on over to theconfessionalspodcast.com, hit the join button, and become a member today.
Merkle Media.
This was all circulating around the base that a giant had been killed, but no one was supposed to talk about it.
I saw three long, bony fingers reach up underneath the door, curl up to grab it, and then disappear.
When he came over to me, dude, he slithered over to me.
And this giant comes out of the cave, and they're all frozen. And he starts running and firing at this giant. But the giant moves. He's got a spear in one hand, and he's running really fast, and spears Dan and holds him up like this. Somebody else, shoot him in the face, shoot him in the face. They basically decapitate him.
Got closer. When he got about 15 yards away from me, I raised that 12 gauge and I blow his head off.
I feel something pulling at my leg, and I look over, and there are two small gray entities pulling at me. And they're literally, I'm getting pulled off the bed.
I reached my hand into this bush, and I touch air. Couldn't breathe, and I couldn't move, because I know I'm seeing a monster.
Yep. Welcome to the show, everybody. You're listening to The Confessionals. I'm your host, Tony Merkle. Thanks for being here. If you have a crazy, wild experience you want to share with me on the show, go ahead and shoot me an email. My email address is theconfessionals@theconfessionalspodcast.com. That's theconfessionals@theconfessionalspodcast.com. Or go to the website, theconfessionalspodcast.com. Hit the contact section and you can reach me that way as well. If it works for me, just get a hold of me. Welcome to another members episode. We have Josh coming on the show today to talk about Bigfoot, Sasquatch, everything involving this property he owned, where him and his son had multiple experiences. They weren't sure what it was at first, but this was 7 to 8 years of their life. From 2009 to about 2016, they had these experiences. They didn't immediately think Sasquatch, but they had visuals, and now they know this was Bigfoot. So let's get to Josh and his experiences with this property right now. All right, today we got Josh on the show. Josh, how you doing, man?
Doing great.
Good, man. So, listen, Josh, by the way, before we get any further into this, did you just move away from the computer?
For just a second.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, he sounds a lot further away than he did a second ago.
yeah, I had to shut the door because I could hear tractor trailers going down the road.
I got it. I got you, man. I got a hair salon next door to me, so I got to close a bunch of doors to make sure the ladies talking and stuff doesn't come into the studio sometimes. It seems like when the more people get over there, the louder it gets. So, listen, I got this email from you, man, and it's interesting because you're in the Roanoke, Virginia area. At least you were when this happened, and you had a property that had Bigfoot activity on it. What I find interesting is some of the things that you said in the email here, as far as just finding prints and how it all unfolded. But I remember here you have that the BFR you were on. finding Bigfoot and you were contacted by BFRO, you were kind of disappointed by your interactions with them, if I recall correctly. And then I know at the end of the email, you kind of hinted at like, this is just a fraction of the story and there's a lot more to it. So I'm here today to hear the lot more to it part. So if you could just start us off though, with just how this all unfolded for you. I mean, you have a property that has Bigfoot activity on it. Did you recognize it as Bigfoot activity right away? How did this all kind of unfold for you as far as you acknowledging that there's something bizarre going on?
Well, at first, we did not recognize it as Bigfoot activity. It was just strange things that kept adding up, and actually got stranger and stranger. I guess I should start by giving a little background as to the setting of where I lived. We no longer live at that house anymore, but the Bigfoot activity had nothing to do with that, though. We just needed to be out farther away from Roanoke. So the house we lived on was on a cul-de-sac, about a half-acre lot. Behind that house was about 15 acres of woods. At the back of my property was a bamboo grove. And I don't know if you've ever had bamboo on a property, but man, it's a constant struggle to keep it contained where it is. And we tried to keep it in the back corner so it wouldn't take over the whole lot. behind that bamboo grove was a small creek. And as it meandered its way through our property, it left, a floodplain, not a very big one, but big enough to where we eventually planted a garden on. And that'll all come into play here in a little bit. About 500 feet up behind the house was a tiny little pond. Maybe a quarter of an acre, had a lot of fish. Actually, the biggest fish I've ever caught. I caught out of that little tiny pond. Had fish, frogs, snakes, turtles, just a lot of, neat things around this property. We had deer and turkey and everything. We're only about a third of a mile outside the city limits of Roanoke. If you're looking at our house from the street to the right, has a pretty steep decline down to that creek that I mentioned earlier. And on the other side of that creek was about a 10-acre pasture. We call that the horse farm because that's what it used to be. It used to be a horse farm. At this point, it was pretty grown up. The grass probably 2 feet deep. And about 70 to 80 yards into that horse farm, that pasture was a dusk to dawn light. It no longer worked anymore, but the pole was still there. At least the light worked when we first moved in, but several years later, it no longer worked. The woman that owned the horse farm was in her late 60s, early 70s, I'm guessing. And I guess she had to care for her ailing husband because she no longer really worked the horse farm. So it was kind of just abandoned. Every now and then there'd be a horse or two in there, but not very often. In that horse farm was about a 3-acre pond. This horse farm backed up against the Blue Ridge Parkway property. And without disrespecting her, I'll just refer to her as the horse lady. That's just how we communicated who she was.
I think she'd rather have you use her real name.
Yeah, I would if I actually remembered what her name was.
Oh, that's fine, man. It's fine.
And like I said, that's with tremendous respect. She was a great lady. In front of our house, facing south, was the street that dead-ended at our lot. And across the street from us was another house. That house owned about 2 acres. The creek also went through their property. And it's what provided the water for the pond that was in the horse field. Behind that house was the Blue Ridge Parkway. It was about 500 feet behind that house. And then those woods that were between the house across the street and the actual Blue Ridge Parkway, there was a trail and it wove in and out and weaved around. And we always called it the horse trail. So this thing went on for miles, just right beside the parkway. It eventually at some point crossed over the parkway and continued on through the woods Like I said, it went on for miles. When we first moved into that house, I need to back up. We called that trail the horse trail. So just so you can get the, when I just call it the horse trail later on, we'll know that that's the trail that leads along the parkway. And the reason I call it that was because the horse farm actually had a gate that led on to that trail in the woods. When we first moved in, it was the summer of 2001. So I made my way to that lady's house that owned the horse farm to ask permission to fish in her pond. She refused, which kind of shocked me. But she said that she used to let people fish in it, but people started coming from the parkway, climbing over a fence, and then, you know, they damaged the fence. And later on, I found where the fence had been damaged. It had been in between the posts. There were big U's kind of pushed down into the barbed wire fence. And, you know, it didn't really think much about it at first. But everybody I've ever talked to or seen cross a barbed wire fence does it at the post. That way you have the post to hold on to keep your balance. So initially I didn't think anything about this. We used to have dogs. I mean, we've always had dogs outside. We would bring them in at night because if not, they would actually bark all night long. One of these dogs was a border collie chow mix. His name was Tippy. He was a pretty aggressive dog. He loved to herd things, but, one night I was outside actually doing some home repairs and he was just looking into the woods behind our house, growling. That kind of gave me a bad feeling. I'm like, well, what in the world is in the woods to make him do that, act like that? So I went inside. After he died, we had two other dogs and they were awesome dogs, but they weren't afraid of anything. It was nothing for us to find animal carcasses in their pen because these raccoons or possums or skunks would find their way into their pen and it was over for them. But if we left them out all night, they would bark constantly all night long. One of our daughter's friends came over one time and said, those woods are creepy, the ones behind our house. So that's pretty much all for the setting up of where we lived and what sort of was going on. And I will say we a lot of times, just to my son had part of a lot of what was going on there. He was with me a lot of the times during a lot of these experiences and had some of his own that I can go into too if you want to later on. And I'll try to go chronologically, but it's been a while, so I don't remember exactly when things happened.
Sounds good.
For all of them, because there was so much activity there. As I mentioned, we moved in 2001. Things didn't really start picking up until about 2011. At least that's when I started noticing them and we started putting two and two together and saying, hey, there's something weird going on. A lot of times when we'd come home either from church at night or some other, you know, just going out to dinner or something, we would pull in our driveway and our headlights shone right into the woods and we would see a shadow there. And our kids would say, now what's causing that shadow? And I'm like, I don't know. But as I mentioned, those woods were creepy. So I didn't investigate that at night. I just waited till the next morning or the next day. And I'd go out there and look and I'd look and look and look. And I'm like, I don't know what would cause that shadow. So there wasn't anything there. Another thing we found was a deer leg, the back leg of a deer stuck in the barbed wire fence. It looked like it had been twisted off the deer. I know deer sometimes get caught in barbed wire fences, but I couldn't figure out how the deer actually spun around enough to actually twist its back leg off all the way. And like I said, these are just weird things. I mean, yeah, that could have happened, but I couldn't figure out how it did it. Another thing that was going on was our dogs, they're fairly big dogs. They're not huge, but you know, they're 60, 70 pounds. They would go through dog food like crazy. So I had the idea. I was like, you know what? Something is going on to eat all of their dog food. I said, I bet it's a raccoon. So one night I went out there and I was just like, well, you know, I'm going to have to do something because dog food is not the cheapest thing in the world. And we got to do something. So I went out there and the dog food we kept outside was in a wooden box, just a box, you know, plywood box with a hinged lid. And I opened that, and the raccoon came flying out of that box. And I was like, yep, that's it. It's just a raccoon. So inside that wooden box, I was like, well, I'll fix that raccoon. I'll put the food in a big plastic Tupperware container with a lid that locks down. And it'll be enough force to where he won't be able to open the Tupperware lid and get in there. Well, it didn't help. We were still missing dog food. Now I would go out there and the Tupperware lid, and I kept it inside the wooden box. So you would have to open the wooden box, then open the Tupperware, then feed the dogs. And the Tupperware lid, it would be closed, latched just like I left it. You'd open it up, and this time it looked like I could see where something had drug its hand through the dog food. There were just like different lines going through there, like you would drag your finger through sand. And I was like, well, that's just weird. I'm not sure what's going on. But I was like, maybe I did that inadvertently, just smoothing it back out after I fed the dogs. Or I don't. Like I said, nothing really was pointing us to think about Bigfoot at all. Number one, we lived right up against the city. I mean, yes, there were woods around us, but like I said, nothing really pointed to Bigfoot. Immediately, I had mentioned that along the creek, there was a floodplain. One couple of summers, I decided, hey, you know, that's a big enough floodplain. We can put a little tiny garden there just every now and then to have our own tomato or, you know, some green beans, things like that. And we even planted spaghetti squash and things grew great there. I mean, it had enough drainage to, you know, so that one's constantly in water. It was a really nice garden spot. Well, as produce began to ripen, I would look at a tomato and say, hey, tomorrow I need to pick that tomato. Well, for that tomato, tomorrow never came, because when I went back to pick that tomato or green beans, they were gone. Nothing ripe ever made it to our table. And we had a little fence around it, so it wasn't something just normal wildlife eating the ripe things. Like I mentioned earlier, we had a lot of deer. So you had to, in order for you to grow anything, you had to either have a plant they don't like or put a fence around it. So I mentioned spaghetti squash, and there was one day when we had spaghetti squash that was about the size of a grapefruit. And, you know, spaghetti squash get really big. I mean, like half the size of a pumpkin or a watermelon before they're ripe. And so the spaghetti squash, and kept looking at it. I was like, you know what? That might actually be something that makes it to our table. I'm not sure what's going to eat that. But it wasn't too long after that, I found that spaghetti squash half eaten, sitting on a rock in our backyard. We had a lot of rock in our property. That whole area there was had a lot of rock, and, you know, so I'm like, what would do that? It looked like a man had just eaten it like you would an apple, and just either didn't like it or something, you know, had to leave and just set it down on the rock. I don't know if it was planning on coming back for it later or what, but it was really bizarre. So throughout this whole time, you know, things are getting weirder and weirder, and they're happening. The weird things are happening more often. So there was one night when my son went out to bring the dogs in, and usually all he would have to do is open their pen and have the back door open to the house, and they would run right in the house. That didn't happen this time. They were gone. They headed up the street. They were gone. So we grabbed some spotlights, and we were out there, and just happened to scan the horse field with my spotlight and noticed that there was something black leaning up against the light pole in the horse field. His shoulders kind of stuck out on both sides of the light pole, probably 4 or 5 inches. It was not tremendously huge, but I just looked at it, and as we were looking at it, the thing got up and ran on all fours. And when it got to the barbed wire, went underneath the barbed wire, and where it went underneath the barbed wire was probably 18 inches off the ground. So it was pretty easy for me or my son or anybody else to get under that barbed wire right there. So it went under that.
This was a preview of today's member episode. If you want to hear the whole thing, head on over to theconfessionalspodcast.com, hit the join button, and become a member today.